Why go to all the trouble of experiencing the great outdoors for yourself when you can listen to a few Northwest Outdoor experts yap about it? This is The Outdoor Line with Tom Nelson, Rob Ensley, and Joey Pyburn on 710 ESPN Seattle and the 710 ESPN Seattle app. The Outdoor Line is brought to you by Yamaha, Sportco Outdoor Emporium, Lowrance, Weldcraft, and Duckworth Boats, Roy Robinson Chevrolet, Kitsap Marina, Harbor Marine, Truck Vault, and Ray Marine Electronics.
Hello, good morning, and welcome to The Outdoor Line of 710 ESPN Seattle, streaming live on MarinethWest.com. Don't forget about the venerable TheOutdoorLine.com with blogs, podcasts, and pictures of Rob Ensley.
What are we doing in here?
Well,
it's the most important hunting day of the year.
I know. Well, at least we're up here in the Roy Robinson RV remote studios. Robbo is down in the Seattle studio, so
he get to be in the studio down there?
Because we're farther.
I came to work for the first time in the last year and a half, so I'm happy to be here. I've just emptied the garbage can, and just cleaned the bathroom. I'm going to clean the bathroom here during the break and get some stuff done around here.
We got to go over the North Cascades Highway. We're going to be there faster than he is.
Yeah.
So that's what we're going to do.
All right.
That's what we're going to do. Just, you know, fired up about opening day. I mean, there's, you know, so much that, you know, you say opening day and it just conjures, you know, a whole lot of fun, a whole lot of memories and, you know, a whole lot of possibilities for a lot of folks across the state.
Yeah. And it's hard to decide what you want to do. You got all these snows and ducks you could go chase, and then there's deer. So I had guys calling, you know, all the regular cast of characters calling, like, hey, do you want to, we're setting up a 20-man snow hunt.
It's like a cartoon.
Wait a minute. 20, you know? 20 yeah. guys, and you can get 10 each.
Yeah, so yeah. I'm not good at math. I think that's like 1,000.
Oh, my god!
You know, we did that once up in the Skagit Valley. We did a listener trip up there, and we had pushing 20 guys in layout blinds. And, I mean, it was World War III, man. When those geese came in, it was hammer time, you know, 20 times. And then the guides were on the end, too. So we had bookend, you know, guides on the end, 22 guns in there. When those flights of snows would come in, it was something else. It was something else. And again, another memory. There you go, yeah. Nelly. Just another memory.
Well, I tell you, one of my favorite parts of open a weekend is definitely that drive over the North Cascades Highway.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and then this year in particular, where, you know, we've had a really hard edge to, you know, the middle of October here. And you know, snow, I mean, we're going to see snow on the pass, man. It was snowing earlier in the week, and, on you know, even there was snow on Stevens and even a dusting on Snoqualmie, let alone, you know, the highest pass in the state, Washington Pass, by right around 5,500 feet there. So, yeah, you know, I don't know what kind of effect it's going to have on it, but I know somebody that we're going to talk to about it that's going to definitely have an idea about it. So, good old Wayne Van Zwal, one of the editors of or one of the columnists, I should say, of Bugle Magazine, mm-hmm. and the author of Mastering Mule Deer, which is a book that I've worn out the pages looking through. It's just a wonderful, great text with regard to learning about the habits of mule deer and what they eat and you know how they act and the whole bit. So looking forward to having him on the show. But before we get there, We're gonna talk to Alex Langbell, who's into a little gun dog safety. I tell you what, this guy mm-hmm. has created a really cool business for himself and helping out a lot of animals and a lot of dog owners as well. Robbo.
Yeah, you can check him out at GundogOutdoors.com. We've had Alex on here a couple of times, but he's got a really cool trauma kit for your hunting dog. And if you've done any bird hunting at all, I don't care whether it's waterfowl, upland, whatever it is, your dog has had some issues out in the field. They've gotten cut by some glass or who knows what, and you've had to patch him up out there. He's got a really cool kit, water bottle, quick release. He's in the waterfowl world, he's really well known. And we're going to check in with him here just in a little bit, 6:25, about his Gun Dog Outdoors program. And then also get some early season waterfowl tips from him as well. I was talking to him this week, and he's already been out shooting ducks. He lives in Montana now. He got the heck out of there. He retired here shortly, well, just 6-8 months ago, and headed for Montana. But he's already shooting ducks and geese and stuff back there. And we're going to check in with him and get some tips for folks out this weekend looking to get on to some early season waterfowl. We got Wayne Van Zwal, 7 o'clock. We've had him on. How many times in the last 10, 11 years have we had him on just preseason or on the opener? We've had him on quite a bit, and he always drops a dime or two. stuff that you need to check out, because he's been in the woods for a long time too. 50 plus years of writing and chasing critters around the West. The guy's legend status out here in the West, and an incredible writer. And then 725, our good buddy Mikey Z, Mike Zavadlo, checking in for Mike Z's guide service out on the coast. Another guy, just a stalwart on the coast, one of the top guides out there. They've been roping some coho out there, and there's enough coho around in rivers here, not only Cowlitz, but on the north end here. Skadge is still open. Green River, that you should tune in for this segment, because he's going to go through some of the techniques that they use out there, twitch and jigs, hoochie spinners, all that stuff, to get some of these coho locally to bite, or if you're headed for the salt duck around the coast as well, that all the same stuff works there. The hump tulips, all this stuff is kind of ubiquitous with all these rivers. So Mike's going to check in 725 and get us going on some of that stuff. So
one of the things we're going to be covering in the Northwest Outdoor Report and talking to Mikey Z about is going to be the meeting, the virtual town hall to discuss those coastal steelhead options. I mean, what are we hearing? What are we thinking with regard to steelhead abundance on the coast this winter? I mean, we've been kind of in an abundance ditch with regard to our ironheads out there. And I know that, you know, last year was kind of a bitter pill to swallow. What are we hearing out there, Robbo?
Well, I think if it was good news, we wouldn't be having town hall meetings. So I think we should probably prepare for more of the same. We'll see what comes out of this town hall meeting. It's October 26th. I believe it's at 5:00. There's information on the WDFW website, but I think we should probably prepare for something similar to last year. And if it's better than that, yay, you know.
This is just going to give guys an opportunity to maybe voice their opinions and have a little bit more input. Last year just kind of got shoved down their throat. So
I think it was a little bit of a panic. A little bit of a panic deal last year. This year, they've got a lot of time to plan and at least get the public involved. And they've got a 12-person committee put together, you know, folks from all up and down the coast that are involved in that steelhead fishery. So that's a good thing. So today is the deer opener, waterfowl opener. We've got razor clam digs coming up this week again. I think we've got something like 44 days of digging left tentatively on the calendar from here to the end of the year. And the last round of digs, I talked to Bob Buchanan at BOMAC this week. The weather was terrible. You know, really late night digs. I mean, some of the digs were in the middle of the night, you know, and there just wasn't hardly anybody out on the coast on that last round of digs. So there should be a pile of clams out there again for this next round of digs. As long as the weather holds up, it should just be stellar out on the coast, you know. So.
Yeah, and when you're out on the coast and you're hoping for good weather in October and November, you sometimes get to go out to the coast and watch the surf pound instead of watch the clam squirt.
Yeah, so. For sure. We got some trout opportunity going on. They're starting to plant some of the local lakes with trout. Talked to Dave Johnson at Kitsap Marina this week, the trout whisperer himself. He's been out chasing trout, imagine that, and catching all kinds of trout on the local lakes. But jump on the WDFW website and look at the catchable trout plants. There's a search field in there. You can put your lake in there, whatever lake you got nearby, and see if there's any trout planted in there. But they're dumping a lot of trout in these lakes right now to get us through the winter. So, and you know, we've got Alex Langbell lined up. We've got Wayne Vanswall lined up. These guys are just great guests. But we've got an in-house hunting expert that we need to pick his brain right after the break. And he's sitting right next to you there, knucklehead. Yeah. That guy right over there.
You mean Joey Piper?
Trust me, Joey.
Trust me, knucklehead.
Not you. I'm looking at Tom on FaceTime. This is how we do these shows where we're all split up. We look at FaceTime. But I follow Joe around in the mountain. You know, the last few years I've been trying to keep up with Joe for the most part in the mountains. And I'm telling you, this guy is an incredible hunter. And Joe, we need to get some tips out of you after the break here on this opener this weekend. And get people going. You know, there's a lot of folks hitting the woods this weekend and a lot of new hunters. Numbers are up, a lot of new people in the woods, and I think we need to pick your brain a little bit. You up for it?
All right.
You good?
Yeah,
secrets?
Absolutely.
Any secrets?
You got five?
I got secrets. They're secrets. You don't tell.
You got five? Five secrets for us, maybe?
Five tips from Joe Pyburn himself.
Joey Pyburn's top five mule deer mashing secrets coming up in 90 seconds here on the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
From the shining shores of Puget Sound to your radio, this is the Outdoor Line on 710 ESPN, Seattle.
Welcome back to the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle. Joey Pyburn sitting here with myself at the in the Roy Robinson RV Remote Studios. Rob Ensley, Matt Nelson, back in the Seattle studios. And so check this out. The earliest Seattle frost was on the 16th of October back in 1946. The average time for that frost is the 13th of November. This year, we had temps in the low 30s earlier this week.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're a deer hunter, Joey, come on, man. That's got to fire you up. It was chilly at the chilly at the rifle range, man.
I know. We're at the rifle range, and they have a big potbelly stove. And yeah. Nelly's like, I'm thinking about firing that thing up.
I'm just about ready to light
it. It's been chilly. Fall is definitely upon us here this week. Yeah, for sure.
There's nothing worse than those years when you're hiking into your Washington deer area in mid-October, and it's 74 degrees.
Yeah.
It just, like, takes it out of you. So I prefer cold. Even a little snow on the ground, you know, it makes for these first time guys, if you got a little snow on the ground or even a frost that kind of lightens things up, it makes it easier to find deer.
No doubt.
Makes it easier to see tracks, lets you know if the game's around. You know, for all these new hunters out there in the woods, some of the just simple things, things that we don't even think about anymore, Rob, right? You got to be proficient with your rifle. You got to spend time at the range. I hear it all the time from guys who are, you know, they hunt quite a bit. They have that buck. They see him. One buddy of mine actually hunting a bear this year. I'm not going to say his name. sees a bear at 335 yards. And instead of taking the time to lay down and make sure he had a good rest, he tried to shoot off his sticks. And that's a long shot, man, to shoot off sticks. So know your rifle. Get to the range, shoot it all year long, shoot it prone, shoot it sitting down, shoot it off your stick, shoot it off your bipod. And then the rest of your gear, don't go into the woods with brand new boots.
Boy, no kidding.
People do it all the time.
How many people
It'll
have done that?
Yeah.
And make sure you got a pack that you can deal with an animal with. Your little day pack, your little lunch pack that you pack your lunch to where it isn't going to work. You got to have something you can pack an animal out with or be able to drag the thing out whole, you know?
Yeah. Oh, well, and, you know, we run our XOs. They're perfect packs. If you want a good pack, you know, you're a new hunter starting out, grab an XO pack. I recommend something in the, at least 3,500 cubic inches. They make some smaller ones than that, but... You know, if you're going to pack a deer out, you're going to have all your gear for the day, spotting scope, lunch, maybe some extra clothes, you know, kill kit, all that junk goes in the pack. Now you got to also cram some deer in there. They have the, you just pop the pack off. You got a meat shelf in there. You can pile a whole quarter in there if you want or two. So know your gear and then try to get out and at least scout once. In your area, like get boots on the ground and get out there and at least see, is there a sign, learn the area.
This year, it might be important to go find the water because we've come off just a smoking hot spring and summer. And I'm worried about the water, especially Joe, where you and I are going. I'm like, okay, are those springs really going to be there? They may have receded all the way down the valley with this drought situation. So that's very important.
Areas you maybe have been into, maybe guys have been hunting in these areas for years. There's always been water in this one little basin. It might not be there this year.
Yeah.
So if you can get boots on the ground in your area and do some scouting before the season, that's great. Also, Onyx or Google Earth.
Yeah. It's,
you can do a ton of scouting preseason. And I mean, hopefully guys have done this at this point, you know. And then you kind of got to know yourself. Know your body, know your limitations, and you don't want to bite off too much. And you also mentally want to like prepare yourself for, you know, if you're a first time hunter, prepare yourself for, you know, it may take you a couple years to get to where you're successful, you know, don't give up.
So I'll say this. Manage your expectations.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Seriously. I mean, Washington is a tough tag to fill, especially on the opener. And don't try to put that all on yourself, especially if you don't know if you're taking your kid out or going out with your wife or stuff like that. Listen, man, it's a wonderful experience to get up that early, watch the sun come up, okay, and see some of the wonderful landscapes that we have in the state. But I tell you what, man, it's a tough deal to shoot a muley in the Okanagan or really get, you know, tag out really anywhere in the state is tough. It is.
But listen, it's very doable.
Sure it is.
You just got to be patient. Give it a couple years. There's so, I mean, look, you can listen to this show. You pick up a ton of information. There's so much stuff online. You can go watch all these YouTube, you know, my cousin's YouTube channel. They have all these mule deer hunts. You'll pick up tons of tips on there, and it'll help you in the years to come. Just don't give up, you know. That's one of the main things.
So Joe Pyburn climbs to the top of the mountain first thing in the morning, gets yep. up to the top. It's still dark. Sun's just starting to peek over the horizon, and you're getting set up. You got your binoculars out. Where are you going to look first for the first part of the morning? And then after that, where are you going to go? Like mid-morning, are you going to kind of start looking elsewhere? You know, what's your strategy going to be up on a mule deer mountain somewhere, a big ridge, you know?
So for mule deer hunting, for me, is all about glassing. It's being patient and glassing and just picking the mountain apart. And so depending on where I'm at, like there's some spots I like to hunt where I go in there. I know where the food is, right? That's the other thing. Like I know what food looks like. And these new hunters, they need to learn what do the mule deer eat? What are they going to be eating? Well, they like sage in the high country. They'll be around that sagebrush. So I'll look at those little pockets. I'll know where the bedding areas are, and they'll be coming from bedding, and they'll be going to feed. Or depending on what the weather's doing, they may be going away from the feed and going to bed. If it's warm, when that sun comes up, they might have been feeding all night. You know, totally depends. Maybe we have a full moon. Sometimes we have a full moon on the opener. Those deer are going to feed all night long. And then as soon as the sun peaks over the top of the mountain, pew, they're out of there, man. They're heading for bed. So, you know, that's where you want to be sitting on the feed first thing in the morning, where you have a shot, you know, close to that feed, and you want to be watching for those bucks.
Now, when you say sage, you're not talking about woody, dry sage. There's green sage shoots that you kind of want to look for, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they'll be feeding on that sage. And then, obviously, in other areas, you know, they'll be on the browse. And then water. Water, depending on where you're at, you know, and like I think we kind of talked about it last week, depending on how dry it is, you know, sometimes it's very humid out, so there's a lot of moisture on the feed. And then the deer are not going to go to feed. They're not going to go to water every day. They're just not. But if it is very dry, there's not a lot of humidity in the air, figure out where that water is. And that's usually going to be something they're going to do in the evening, like late, right before dark. They'll probably move down to water and then go back up.
Okay, so start at the top. Know your gun, know your gear,
mm-hmm.
know your area, know yourself, and the slash pay, have patience, right? Okay, so now we're to the final of Joey's five here, and digging into knowing the deer.
Yeah,
and you're getting into that with where they're moving and where they're feeding on, right? But are the bucks at this time of year at the least bit interested in being around does? Do we know? I mean, are we still thinking about bachelor groups?
It's different every year. You know, that's the knowing the deer thing. It's like, you got to know the deer are different every year. It's not always, they're not always going to be still bachelored up this time of the year, but sometimes they are. And we've had this really dry kind of drought situation. I would guess the deer, some of these bucks are still going to be bachelored up. But then I've seen it where you go in there and they're like running does already, you know, in mid October, and we're a little bit later, and it's going to go till the 26th. I'll give guys a tip right now. Don't go hunt on the opener. That's kind of one of the things I've done, you know, in the last 15 years. I don't go for the opener. Usually I wait. Most guys go for the opener. They get discouraged. They go home, or they kill a buck. They're done. I go back for the last 5 days of the season. A lot of the time, I have my area to myself, and you're going to have a lot better shot at those bucks being closer to the rut. And that is, for me, by far the funnest time to hunt mule deer, because you can just post up on a big, huge basin. And I've sat there for days, and if you can find a little group of does in there, you'll watch bucks come over the ridge, walk miles through burns, and they'll go right to those does. They'll go check every doe. They'll turn around, and they'll walk a mile back up right over the ridge and gone. And you're like, wow, that buck just, you know, and he's headed. He ain't just going over there to bed. He's going to check another batch of does. And he'll go back and forth.
Got so that, one you know, chance. That, he's got one chance this whole year to get lucky. And this is it, man. I'm going to walk until I find somebody.
Is my girlfriend in the bottom of that basin? And he'll walk down there and be like,
nope.
None of you,
not
my
here. Nope.
I'm heading 5 miles north.
But look at that. There's a 6.8 Western perched up on the rocks up there.
Yeah.
You know, and that's it, too, is the interplay these days between the flatter shooting guns, this, you know, 6.8, the 6.8 Westerns, the 6.5 PRCs, and the use of those range finders. I mean, your lethal distance is really stretched out, but only if you confidently know what that range is. And that's, you know, I've been playing around with those the Razor HD 5000s that have that inclinometer on it too, and it gives you, you know, your actual shooting distances on there, and you make that work in with the Vortex BDC, the dead holdover right there, and you got hash marks for each one of those points, and you know, once you're, which is why we went back to the range a couple times to make sure, you know, we were both at that 200-yard zero, because then, you know, you can use that reticle, that BDC reticle, to know where you're going to be hitting out to 600 yards with that 6.5. And that's, you know, and with confidence, or excuse me, with practice comes confidence. And, you know, you need to know where that gun's hitting if you're going to be looking at those longer shots, for sure. You owe it to the critter, no question about it. All right, speaking of owing it to the critter, Alex Langbell knows that we owe something to our furry friends that we bring out in duck blinds and run all over the pheasant fields and everything like that. Working gun dog safety. Gun Dog Outdoors. Alex Langbell joining us next. Turn the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
Welcome to the BOMAC Tech Line. BOMAC has all the gear for all your techniques, and SMI Shellfish gear is simply the best. BOMAC, we catch big fish.
Welcome to the Tech Line, presented by BOMAC here in the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle. Rob Ensley and Matt Nelson are in our Seattle studios. Joey and I coming at you from the remote Roy Robinson RV studios here. Welcome to opening day. And we're lucky to get our next guest in opening day because this is a busy day for the hunting dog owner, Alex Langbell of Gun Dog Outdoors. Welcome to the show. How you doing, Alex?
Morning, Alex. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Alex.
I'm good, guys. Thanks for the invite. I sure appreciate it.
Yeah, I talked to you a couple days ago. You have been busy with Gun Dog Outdoors. Your little company is not so little anymore. sounds like you're shipping stuff all over the country for good reason. You got a great product there, especially your trauma kit with a firefighting background. You know exactly what to put in that kit to patch up a dog out in the field. And I pulled mine out the other day. Of course, our dog is a house dog, unfortunately. I haven't been able to send her to duck school yet. But, pulled that out and patched her up. She got a little cut out in the backyard with some glass or whatever. But, super cool kit. You got a cool water bottle, a quick release for your duck dog in the blind. Why don't you talk about some of the stuff that you've got for these gun dogs and how you developed it, man?
Being in the industry for the fire service for 26 years and then having hunting dogs since I was 12, seen pretty much every kind of injury and that can happen to these hardworking animals. And so finally I just got, you know, looking for a kit myself. Finally I just put one together and I know, you know, basically I call it a combat medic kit for hunting dogs and for humans. You know, it's all products that I've used, nurses use, vets use in the field or, you know, in hospitals and stuff. So, just top quality products that, I just kind of put together, no nonsense kit that you can carry with you and pretty much just use it need to. The basic idea of it is just to keep the dog alive till you can get to a vet or a hospital and get it treated. So it's just been overwhelming, the amount of sales we've had with those, and then our quick release and just all of our products. Like you said, the company's just really blowing up. Like we hired our first two employees, which is crazy. I never thought that we'd be actually doing that. So it's pretty neat. It's just a great feel good products because you're providing stuff that's just not a gimmick. It's stuff that's helping. And so I absolutely love it.
Yeah, well, and injuries to your best friend are no joke. And with an emergency medicine background, myself, Alex, you're no stranger to drilling, right? And if you just keep this thing in its little plastic wrapper until you need it, you're making a huge mistake. You know, you need to figure out what's in there and just have some basics. So how would you advise guys to approach this and open this dog trauma kit up for the first time and just kind of maybe get acquainted with it a little bit?
Yeah, real easy. First of all, open it up and get familiar with the product, because the last thing you want to do is learn how to use the product in that time of emergency. You want to be confident in your skills, you know, and the product and how it's used and how to apply it. And so it's pretty basic stuff, but still you need to open it up. What's nice is I've included a field reference guide, a little booklet that kind of walks you through anything that can happen to your dog in the field and signs and symptoms and how to treat them and what to do. So it doesn't take a medically trained professional to use the kit. It's just a very no-nonsense basic kit that just, again, to stop what's going on bad, whether it be hypothermia, hyperthermia, injuries, you know, such as cuts and abrasions, anything that can happen. I get notifications all the time from people who use the kit, and then some of them actually use them on themselves. So it's a great feeling, like I said, to be able to use it. And we do have some videos online, gundogoutdoors.com, that kind of goes over the kit. We're going to do a big push on our YouTube page where we're actually going to go through each sign and symptoms and actually walk through how to treat a dog that is in hypothermia, you know, their body temperature gets too cold and stuff like that. So just a great reference. And another great product thing about this kit is that, like, if you use any of the product in the field and you give us a little love on social media, I'm going to restock your kit for free, whatever you use. So you basically got a lifetime kit. So it's just we're a U.S.-based company that just really feel important to take care of our four-legged friends.
Yeah, man, that is awesome, dude. And so I have one of your kits, and I also have the water bottle. And so one thing, I've taken my first aid kit out of my bird hunting bag, and I added just a few things into Tug's kit, your gun dog outdoor kit.
Yep.
And I just have that in there because I'm like, it has everything and I can utilize this stuff if I get a cut or whatever, you know. And the water bottle, I used to just take a water bottle and I would, you know, hold it and Tug would lap and most of the water would go.
Dump it in your hand.
Yeah, most of the water would end up on the floor.
Right on the
ground. So your water bottle, guys can go to the website and check it out, but it's got a button. You push the button, you hold it upside down. The little, almost like a cup, fills up and Tug drinks the water, and then
trough on there.
It's like a little trough, and what he doesn't drink, I just hold the button and the water goes back in. It's awesome, dude. I have it with me all the time. And so for guys who spend a lot of time in the field with their dogs, if you think you're not going to have an injury, you're crazy, because your dogs are running full speed. There's barbed wire fences. There's
nasty,
Russian olives on the east side. They will tear your dog apart. And man, having a kit like this can save you a ton of money in vet bills, because your dog rips himself open. You get it bandaged up quickly. Maybe you keep him from getting infected. It's a great product, man. And thank you very much for sending me one. I appreciate it.
You betcha.
Yeah, ours never leaves the rig, our water bottle. We got a couple of them now. I think I got one in my truck. The car's got one, and so there's always water in there for Libby, the lazy family dog.
Rob's got two girls, too, so he has one for each of the girls.
Our dog will never get hypothermia because he never leaves the couch, for crying out loud. But we're still working on that. I'm still lobbying on my behalf, at least. But now you're an expert-level waterfowl hunter, man. I hate to get away from the gun dog stuff, but you are expert-level waterfowl hunter. What tips can you give folks, man, early season versus late season hunting? These ducks haven't been shot at till this morning, and in fact it's still dark in studio. I mean, guys are still getting set up here. Any little tips you can throw out there for folks early season right now to help throw a couple more ducks down?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and this is a subject, waterfowl, like we could talk for days on, and I just absolutely love it. But some of the things, the key things to remember that I do, just remember, it just really depends on what you're hunting. These early season birds, they haven't seen a whole lot, so you can get away with a lot. And it really depends if you're hunting migrating birds or birds that are local birds that have been sitting there. But I always have a rule of thumb. Whatever I'm hunting, I try to put half the spread if I can, if it's earlier season. I mean, obviously, if you have a field of 500 geese, I'm not going to put 250 full-body decoys out unless maybe it's Canada. But something like that, I'll put out quite a few ducks, same thing, about half of what I got. That's the early season. If you're hunting play like refuges, edges of refuges and stuff, then you want to put big spreads, because that's what they're looking for. They're used to the a lot of decoys and stuff like that. A lot of ducks. They're looking for that. If you're hunting migrating birds, again, big flocks. They're flying over. They're looking for that feed. They're looking for the safety numbers. You know, they're new to the area and they're looking where all the birds are. So that's when I put out the big spreads. This is when I will put out big spreads. I hate putting out big spreads because it's a lot of work, but it can be very effective. And as the season progresses, I will go down to as little as I've guided guys from Seattle, seven guys, and I told them, everyone grab one decoy and go go put out. I'm absolutely insane.
That's like a day off, you know, right there. Shoot,
it,
man.
It is. So, but we absolutely smash them, because hunting those lessers on the east side of the state, they'd get so accustomed to seeing the same numbers, 10 to 12 dozen decoys. All of a sudden they're hitting these small, they'll just land separately. So, little spreads work phenomenal at the end of the season. I mean, don't be afraid to, I've hunted over three duck decoys before if you're in the spot. And so it's just, they do get decoy shy. They try to use your best decoys at the end of the season. Don't go out at the beginning of the season and put out your, if you use stuffers or if you made stuffers or your full bodies, try to get away with the decoys that, like your silhouettes and stuff like that, things that aren't maybe the highest quality. So as the season progresses, as these birds are learning and getting shot over these decoys, you're actually progressing, getting trickier with them. So like I say, just don't throw out your whole hand at once. And then another big thing is I try to be different than everyone else. If I'm hunting an area and I know, like I said, everyone's throwing out a ton of decoys or 10 or 10 dozen, I try to be different. And I'll set up in a field. Like if you know it's a public field that these guys, they're going to get hammered, there's going to be two, three trucks that show up. Do your scouting, figure out where those birds, are sitting nearby. Because when those birds get shot out, they're going to go somewhere else. And if there's a field that nearby and there's been birds in it, most likely it's going to be in that field. And I've been very successful doing that, knowing that, well, I'm not going to fight with these, four other guys scouting a field. I'm going to go over here to this field that's, maybe half a mile away where the birds are going to bounce to, and I'm going to get them when they come by. And so the big thing is, if you can get underneath the birds where they see you as they come out and as they go over, you just improve your chances of harvesting, a good limit of birds or whatever you're going for.
Will you always use a couple spinners in your spread? You always throw a couple of them out?
So spinners, they're great for the early season. As the season progresses, they get used to it. Spinners were great in field hunts. When you start hunting ponds and rivers and potholes and stuff like that, they tend to kind of shy away. Sometimes you'll attract the higher ones, but as they get closer, they just see that and they kind of will flare off there. So the way I will use a spinner, and this is a pull spring in Washington. Now that I live in Montana, I can go to a remote control battery operated, but I would run a pull string in Washington, and I would just like you would do a duck call, just hit the corner. So when you want to track them, you just you call them like in a box when you're calling at ducks, right when they have to make that decision whether to turn and come towards you or go the other way. That's when you hit them with a duck call. Same thing with a spinner. You hit that, have someone pulling on that spinner while you're calling it, hitting it, and doing it right. And it works really, really well if you do it right. Don't just sit there and pull flap, 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 because unless you're in a field, and field hunting is completely different. They just, something about that they just can't resist.
I'm not very good at calling, Alex. So I get to pull the string. That's my job in the duck blind. Pull
Alex,
the string.
Alex Langbell of Gun Dog Outdoors. How about early season calling? We got another minute here, so and the importance of calling early season versus late.
I feel personally, as far as calling and versus ducks, ducks are going to be a lot more vocal in the breeding season, in my opinion, because they are, especially the hen call, which you're doing mainly trying to get those green heads in, because they're looking for hens and stuff like early season, not so much. So a lot more feeding chuckles and stuff like that. When you're calling, don't overcall. A lot of time guys will just blow on the calls when the bird's coming. If they're coming to you, why are you going to screw it up? Wait till they're going away or they don't decide, no, that's not right. Then hit them with the call.
Oh, we got all kinds of ways we can screw it up, Alex. Yeah, no, we screw it up every which way but loose.
If they're doing what you want them to do, shut up.
That's why we use that boss shot shell. We need all the help we can get. Trust me, man.
He's Alex Langbell, GundogOutdoors.com. Alex, thank you so much for your time and your great products. I got some furry friends here that are really appreciative of the work you do, buddy.
Well, I appreciate that, guys. And you guys have a great season. I hope that all your listeners knock them dead.
Thanks, buddy. Right. We'll be in touch, man.
Good luck.
See you, man.
Okay.
Go get them.
Good luck, guys. Okay.
All right. Coming up next, Raymarine Picks of the Week for opening day right here on the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
Welcome to the Outdoor Line Picks of the Week, presented by Raymarine Electronics. Don't just go fishing. Go hunting underwater. Raymarine, simply superior.
Situational awareness. It's all about your radar, it's about your FLIR, it's about keeping you safe, and collision avoidance. Go to raymarine.com and find a complete selection of marine radar scanners, whether we're talking open arrays or radomes. Raymarine has got you covered. All right, Rob Ensley, talk to me. What do you got? Opening day, picks of the week.
Still some coho to be had. We're still beating that drum here. Skagit's open till through the 24th. It is closed 3 days a week, though. Remember that. If you head up there, it's closed Tuesday, Wednesdays, Thursdays. During the middle of the week, but it's been good. Talk to the folks up at Holiday Sports. Talk to Kevin up there if you want to report up that way, but there's plenty of cohos in there. Green's got a bunch of fish in it. Salt duck's fishing well. Cowlitz is jumping, and the hub tulips got a bunch of fish in it as well out on the coast. We've got razor clam digs coming up here starting Tuesday the 19th, running through the 25th. We've got 44 tentative days of digging left between now and the end of the year. If you miss this dig, don't worry. There's plenty of more time to get out and dig some razor clams. If you look at the month of December, it's practically every day in December. I mean, there's tons of days in December to get out there. But listen, today is the statewide general rifle opener for deer. A lot of folks hitting the woods. I guarantee the North Cross here right now is just tons of people rolling over the North Cross and Snoqualmie Pass and all that stuff. Getting a late start if you're heading over right now. But the folks are heading over the east side to chase some mule deer. Whitetails, you got an extra few days in some of those select whitetail units up in northeast. I think you got till the 29th. And then here on the west side, you got till the 31st. And Joe mentioned earlier, wait until the end of the season on the east side for mule deer. You wouldn't be, you know, that wouldn't be a bad idea here on the west side, too, to wait till the last 4 or 5 days of the blacktail season to get out and almost use these early days to scout. Look for sign, look for does. If you can locate some blacktail does on this side of the mountains right now, park on them. Because there's going to be some bucks milling around there. And towards the end of the season, they get more active. And I've hunted blacktails for a long, long time and spent a lot of time in the woods with them. And you'd be surprised. I mean, you go out there 4 days from the end of the season, and you see 2-3 deer. And then 3 days, you see 10. And then 2 days, you see 15. And the last day, you it's like, wow, am I in Montana? Where did all these deer come from? I mean, they're just in the timber and in the brush. They're nocturnal. Until the rut kicks in.
Yeah.
And those last couple of days can just be awesome. And those blacktails are
creepy.
Roaming around.
They're creepy little blacktails.
They're brush rats is what they are. And, some of these bucks will get shot here, you know, the first few days of the season. But really the last few days are really prime time. And then the late hunt in November. And then we just had Alex Langbell on, Gun Dog Outdoors. Just a gem of a guy. Check out his company. They got some really cool products for your bird dogs. And he had some good tips for you waterfowl hunters too, you know, as far as setting out your spreads, your spinners, no spinner, when to call, when not to call.
I like the don't show your whole hand right out of the gate. You don't need to go out there and put out this huge spread. Mm-hmm. Start small because the birds are kind of dumb and, you know, save all the fancy tricks for when the birds get
smart. Well, and how many times have we sat over big spreads And, you know, you got your onesie twosies buzzing around. Uh-huh. But they're not coming in, man. And they go and they land like 150, 200 yards away over there. They've seen those spreads, and there is no way they're coming within 60 yards of that dang spread. And they circle and they circle and they circle looking and looking and looking. And then finally they take off and they land over there. And pretty soon, you know, 2-3 land and then 4 and 5. And pretty soon you got 20 ducks out there 200 yards away. They're not
but
coming
in. That's what keeps us going.
For sure.
Back. It's like 4 days a week.
Yeah.
I'm like, those stupid ducks.
I know. It's terrible. We need help. Oh, like man. 10 days and a couple 2-day follow ups, and we'll get you all fixed up.
Quacker College is going to start here pretty quick.
And then for anybody out there, and I don't know anybody that's got this kind of money, but I guarantee some listener out there has 40 grand burned in a hole in their pocket. The governor tag, there's a governor tag up for grabs in Wyoming right now. Our buddy Joe Poteet from South Fork Outfitters just pinged Joe and I. He's like, hey, hey, you guys want to come do this? I'm like, yeah, 40 grand?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm going to rob the kids' college fund and, you know, go get all my change together and run it down to the grocery store and put it through a little change machine, see if I get 40 grand out of it. It's not going to happen. But somebody's got that kind of money, and these are he hunts the primo area in Wyoming. All these bulls come out of Yellowstone Park. And you're looking at 380-plus bulls. Most of them are over 400 that they take out of there.
Huge
These
bulls.
Are real elk. Yeah. Yep. SouthForkOutfitters.com.
And
Joe
look,
Poteet, he's
40
a sweet
grand?
Guy. Yeah.
I mean, look, I'll never be able to afford to do that. But I hear of guys spend 100 grand on these governor's tags.
Yeah.
And these tags, that Wyoming tag, for 40 grand? Somebody out there is going to grab that sucker.
I mean, the rates are low right now. If you want to put a second mortgage on the house, now's the time to do it.
Low.
That's a great time to take out a HELOC.
I'm going to start selling. That's it.
Take
I'm going to go
HELOC,
get divorcelawyersformen.com.
We're
all three of us.
It's called a HELOC, folks, and that's why they make these
go.
Things. So,
We got a jammed second hour. We've got Wayne Van Zwal. We've got the Northwest Outdoor Report. Got our old buddy Mike Z from the coast. Roy Robbins is really wearing a palm wash. Stay tuned for a packed hour or two right here. The Outdoor Line 710 ESPN Seattle.